Yo, 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 welcome back, people, to another episode of North of Samora podcast. It's another chilly and sizzy episode. I am your host. You know me, you know my name. I am joined by the smartest one, Mr. Valentine. How are you, man?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I am doing excellent. It's been a busy week for you, eh? You were up and down doing the rounds at the business events.
Yeah, started off on the week mentoring young content creators at the Zimbabwe Content Creators Startup Week, and then ended up at Zimbabwe's first drone conference, and then a bunch of brand event openings.
The busiest man. Fucking world, man. I like it. Today, man, this is a special episode. This is a real dope episode. We got one of the brothers in the house. We go way back. I'm not even lying to you. We go way back. Like crash way back. Like same
way, class. Way back.
Yeah, same crash, same prep school class, same high school class, rentals knew each other. We used to carpool together, all of that. This is really a day. This is literally a day one of mine.
Yeah.
My guy, Kunyai Ranganai, welcome to the show, my brother.
What up? Thank you. Thank you for having me this evening.
No, thank you for taking the time, man. I know you know, things are a little hectic for you, but I appreciate you coming through and kicking with us.
No, this is exciting. I'm excited for tonight. For the conversation.
Well, hey, why don't you just give us a little bit of a background on how you've been doing, tell the people what you've been up to.
So, yeah, as you heard, my name is Kunyai Ranganai. I am a lawyer by profession. I practice mostly commercial law. As a criminal, as you badari. My client does not pay. I am married now, celebrated a year in August.
Congratulations.
So, I'm out of the streets. I am in the kitchen and I'm not leaving. Yeah, man.
Awesome. That is awesome, man.
That's me, man. That's life. Hustling in the streets in Zimbabwe. Trying to make a dollar.
Hey, it must not be easy, man. I commend you both for doing your thing and surviving in that world, because I can only imagine the hustle on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's hectic. I think for me, I've reached a stage where I'm like, if you're not here, it will take me chapters to try and explain to you why we are surviving, how we are surviving. Like, mathematics, that I did at school, I had to know everything. Multiplication, division, subtraction, we have to remember those formulas, because they come in handy every day.
Yeah, even differentiation and integration, bro, trying to calculate that rate week to week. It's got to make sense somehow.
Yeah, week to week, trying to figure out why the rate went up, who might be causing the rate to go up, Algebra,
yeah, this name Tsindo was my one.
But yeah, man, that's me.
Yeah, that is a great insight to the people who at least don't know. I think most of our listeners are Zimbabwean, so they all relate to everything that we're talking about here. well, look, this, first of all, the Chilean season, we need to explain that, because I think the last episode with Walt, we ended with it. And there was no context. It was like an inside joke moment. And so I figured we should explain it. So, Ragus, you tell the story the best from what I remember. Can you explain to everyone what the Chili and Sizi is and where that came about?
Hey, Chili and Sizi. It's been an odd minute since I remember the story. Someone give me a pointer.
What was it?
To spark my brain.
Was it in Manos? Manos was saying, was trying to say you guys were being silly and cheesy or something. He was complaining to people like, you're being silly and cheesy. So you're being chilly and cheesy. And if someone heard it, And it was like an inside joke, so people were laughing at it or something like that.
Yes, yeah, basically, it was one of, I don't know if it was at a practice, basically, but anyway, we were doing the usual marimbas and everything, and then I guess the listeners know Mr. Manmano walked into the room. I don't know, were we missing? I don't know, we were doing something that he wasn't happy with. And then he wanted to sound cool at the same time as trying to be serious. So he was like, "Ah, you guys, you." I think he was like, "What is it? I think he was trying to be like, he's like, stop chilling and being silly." But English and Shona met each other, and basically, what came out of his mouth was "stop being chilly and sizzy," and everyone was like, "What? Chilly and what?" So from that moment on, it was an inside joke for anyone who was playing marimbas. If you just heard Chile and Zizi, you just knew. There was some craziness going on.
Man, it was an inside joke between a lot of rumba people, because there was multiple schools who knew that as well, because I'd heard it from the Pelions, and Walter, and Alawi are the ones who told me about it.
Yeah, Chile and Zizi. Yeah, if you played marimbas around the time we were around, you knew chimpanzees.
Oh my gosh, that is hilarious. Yeah. But yeah, hey, look, the story of how we saw that band. This is, you know, this episode is really, or at least the series is really just about how the birth of rimbing. Wanted to kind of touch on the rimbing aspect of rimbas.
The rimba squad.
Yeah, our very unique group of players and characters, the band that we had together. And, you know, how it all, you know, came about. And, you know, you want to, like, me and Vali shared our stories of how we got into marimbas. You want to kind of share your story of how it all came about with you?
Sure thing. Marimbas, we at high school, St. John's, we were kind of just introduced to it as part of music, as part of what the music department offered today. You can play a guitar here, or you can join the choir, or you can do this particular, what was it? So it was, you could either join the choir, you could play, at the time it was join the choir, play guitar, play marimbas, and I think the pipe band. Right. So, and then when you'd go for music lessons, you would choose which thing you wanted to go and do. And so for me, I know in my form one, form two years, I was in the choir, in my early days. But then the pull towards, marimbas started to happen, especially because of the one, the only, the progenitor, the creator, the be all and the end all, the one who owns the keys to the Chamber of Secrets, Mr. Manu Manu, pulls you in, and he's like, "No, come, let's play." And you start to learn. And so, you know, you start to learn to play, and then he saw, there's something in this, this guy being myself. And started playing, and he then was like, "No, come through. Let's you can come through for marimba club, and we'll start with the intermediary." And yeah, basically, I bit, and I never let go until I bit, but it bit me. The bug bit me back, and it's always been a part of my life.
Yeah, that Manu's pull is crazy. The way he plays the marimbas. Just about it the most, about just how Manu's simplicity and the way he plays, in those lessons as well, because we were all projects for him, right? So in those lessons, he was kind of just looking for new players who could come join the band. And introduced it. My story was kind of similar to yours. We were in the same class, so it was all happening at the same time for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, you know, Vali, were you? You had classes with Manus, did you?
Yeah, the first few classes. He actually recognized me from Heritage. He was like, "Ah, dude, I saw you at Combined. What? You should come through and pick rimbas since you're already doing it." So much the same. So it was basically like, yeah, it's going to be a bit of an adjustment. Expectations a little bit higher. Again, straight to Manu's point is that dude would not sell you dreams. He'd tell you exactly what it was from the beginning. Like, it's going to be different. So that straight upness helped quite a lot in being able to learn, you know, effectively.
Yeah.
Manu's, yeah, he never sold dreams at all. No, that was for sure. You never did that.
No.
But he had a way of just putting it. He had a way of putting confidence in, you know, how you're playing. That was what was dope about Manu's, because that group, you know, like talent wise compared to like other schools, it wasn't maybe there. But Manu's used to put a confidence in us that if we could just play at a certain level, all you had to do was just learn how to play at a certain level, and you'd be fine. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah,
it was just the cohesiveness of it all that mattered more than anything. But he was the one were you there, Rangers, for the Chamber of Secrets?
Yeah, I was. I'll never forget the day.
yeah, tell that story, because I wasn't there for some reason. I forget where I was, but I wasn't there for that that practice.
Yeah, so basically, we had, by that time, we had gelled as a band. We were playing really well. The songs that he had been teaching us, whichever instrument we were playing, be it the soprano, the baritone, the tenor, the bass, whoever was playing their role was playing it well. And he had hinted to it in the past, but as a promise, like, one day if you guys really do well, I will introduce you to the Chamber of Secrets. For those who don't know, or who are trying to like, what, Chamber of Secrets? Yes, you are right. Chamber of Secrets is a pool, pop culture pool from Harry Potter. Harry Potter was the thing at that time. So he then, that was at a practice. It was one of our usual regular practices in the afternoon. And we were warming up doing, because for us, I'm sure these other guys remember, you made sure that he never walked in with you not doing something, because if he saw you just lying around, that's when he used to make us do laps. He'd make us carry the marimbas. He'd make you do push-ups. It was a thing. Like, you had to be doing something. So that day, you know, we're all just playing around, doing whatever, warming up, doing everything. He's like, all right, guys, stop. Today we're not going to start with whatever, rehearsal or whatever. Let's put our sticks down and come and sit down. So we all in the garage at the back there, came to the front, found some chairs and sat down, and he got out the chalkboard, and he wrote the Chamber of Secrets, and he was like, I'm going to introduce you to the Chamber of Secrets. And like, okay, well, the day has come. Like, what is this? And he basically then showed us how to create music. He showed us the chromatic and the monochromatic, the minor, the major scales, and he showed us the three chords. He basically showed us the basic fundamental principles without having to write what do they call those clefs and
sheet music,
things on a sheet of paper.
Bro, we taught us that a lot in music class, bro.
He taught us music without making us write music. So he gave us the ability to hear chords. The Chamber of Secrets gave us the ability to interpolate. So if the song was in C and he then told us go into D, we knew ultimately, okay, I'm playing D, so now I need to play this. I need to play this key for it to sound melodically correct, but still sound like the same song. And he opened up what was a metal frame with wooden pieces that you're hitting with sticks, and it became it was an instrument, but then the world was open. Like, you're like, oh, I can do this. I can, if I play this at the same time as this, it now sounds like this. If I hit this key with this key, this is the sound that sounds like. And so, he opened it up for us, and that changed. Once he gave us that information, it changed the way we started playing. We played music because we were like, oh, what if I do this instead of this? What if I hit this chord at this time whilst Ningi on the soprano is doing this? And for us, that was that made it super exciting for us.
Yeah, I remember the way he did it, though. The way he was doing it was really interesting because as I got older, I then learned like the whole music chart and all that kind of stuff. But I think he understood, and it's not saying he was withholding music theory from us. No, it's like sometimes it's difficult to convey to everybody how to make the sound work because it doesn't work like classical music. So I'm guessing some people will be confused as to why it took him so long to then teach us this. It's not like trying to learn, you know, sheet music, you know, beats and all that. You don't create based on what's on the sheet. You create based on theory. So essentially, if you're playing the same thing, you can play whatever you want as long as within time and within phrase. So then you got into the phrasing system of how ethnomusicology works or African music works in phrases. So we then got, oh, no, listen, if you're in the first phrase of, you know, G major, for example, GBD is your first, but you're not only excluded to that. You can play E, B, E. You go, if you're in the second phrase, you can throw in a young F sharp, a B, if you want to, but you have to be slick about it. And then understanding the differences between, or understanding the relationships between certain keys together, like A and C. So you could technically play A and C relatively interchangeably, but it has to be, everyone has to be on the same wavelength. So the way he did it for me was like, was brilliant because remember Angus, he then put that diagram up with the keys and where you get, which keys you can play in which phrase and how you can play them. Which keys are not really acceptable in certain phrases unless everybody's on that. So again, the big reason he kept this from us for a while because it takes, the theory was important because, the theory is important, but learning the rhythm, learning the polyrhythmic nature of marimbas is probably the first thing you need to learn before you need to worry about the music theory. Because the dexterity is the most important thing. Can you be flexible enough to navigate to classical music? Mm-hmm. This is difficult because, you know, I don't know how to describe it. Like, I don't know how to describe it fully. You probably need to hear it. But
it's mind blowing. It's life changing. It was like, ta-da! Like, and it was befitting that he called it the Chamber of Secrets because it was just that. If you heard someone play C, E, G, you automatically knew what was next.
Yep.
Because he had showed the information and just being like, what? There's like that scene, you know, right? That scene in The Matrix when dude wakes up and he's now seeing green code. He's like,
He's seeing he's seeing it and he's touching it and.
That's what it was like hearing, because like you went from up until that point, everybody was just playing parts. You learned variation, you played it. Mm-hmm. You just knew it was you just knew what it was. You didn't know what you were playing, you just knew I go from here to here to here. And then the Chamber of Secrets, like, no, this is why you go from here to here. So they're like, oh, so I can go from here, I can go down this way, and I can also go up this way. And then I can go double G, and it was like, oh, wow. This is, I remember hearing that afterwards and just, now we could improvise. And now we could just freestyle. That's when the freestyling just went to another level. Because before that, I was used to freestyle. Remember those young songs, Ana Diwali, and I Do You. And we used to play, and when we used to play those, that's when we go ham because we could freestyle. But then after the Chamber, also freestyling, you know, actual like songs that we were taught, that's when we went to another level, man.
It changed. Like I like you brought that up, because when we started, we used to love, and at that time, a marimba band, you were deemed cool if at some point during your like presentation, the songs that you're doing, if you like switched it up and then you played Diwali, or you switched it up and then you played, I think at that time, I remember So Sick by Neo. I'm so sick of love. Like, people here, like, oh my God. I mean, we did it. We also did it. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but, you know, we then realized, we don't have to think by putting a pop culture song as the freestyle part, that's the best we can do. we can take the same song and people will think that we're playing a new song, but it's still the same song. It's just that because of the abilities and the information you've given us with the Chamber of Secrets, we could now switch it up.
Same exact song. It's just timing and how you're, the limitations you're putting in the first, probably third phrases.
Right. The Chamber, remember when after the Chamber, the song that we used to punish the most was Runyara. That was the one where if that song played at any event, that was just, everybody would just be like warming up, treating, okay, this is the one now. That one in Zigamiso. We used to kill Zigamiso. Like, that was a song that used to, that was when I remember we went to another level, because when we used to kill that song, we used to struggle with that song. That was always a struggle song for us. And then there was one event, we played it for like 8 minutes. I was like, okay, Now we're cooking.
It was the Mikos Hotel.
It was.
What was that, Vale?
Was it Mikos?
What did you say,
Vale? Was it at Mikos Hotel?
I think so.
That's the, that's the longest I ever remember playing that song.
Humble brag. Humble brag. For the listeners, humble brag. We were kind of popular.
Kind of popular.
Yes. Hey, bro. Tell them. We were. We were all over the joint.
We were all over the joint.
Bro.
Yeah.
But, hey, look, just to get into like the rimbing, describe that band from your perspective that we were forming, because it was a very interesting band and a lot of very interesting characters. That in the beginning, they were growing pains because we used to steal all their variations. And we're going to get into that with Sean on another episode, I'm sure. But, you know, what I remember from that group, it was a very interesting group of characters that worked. Because we were all kind of, nerds in our own rights. But at the same time, you know, it was a great mix of, and complementary characters, I guess, you know, because when you put in Anakui and then you know Chimutsa as well, I mean, there's a kid and you know, TJ, those are all different characters, man. Very interesting characters. What do you remember from that band and the journey we went on? Because it's a fun journey.
It's one of the, if not for, I think for me personally, that is my highlight of my high school life. Like when I think of high school, those the most fond memories and the most good memories are linked to marimbas, whether it was playing, practicing on the bus, laughing, wondering how the heck we're feeling high, and you're like, guys, what did we drink? Like, what happened? Someone. Like, I remember all those. Those are fond memories. And when you're asking me the question, I think a reference that people might appreciate, pop culture references, he moneyballed that group. It's a group that, when you look at the group, it shouldn't make sense. Because in our group, you had Sean, who was technically in the choir singing, who's gifted and who's continued in his current life succeeding with the singing and the acting. And then you had some scrawny little Form 1 kids, Form 2 kids joining. And later on, you had a Chinese boy joining. You're like, why? How? But he somehow saw value where people might not see value. He saw talent, he saw creativity, and he was willing to put in the time and the effort to hone and to sharpen that ability. We did our 10,000 hours.
Yes.
We did our 10,000 hours.
Thank you for bringing that up, Valid. Do you remember those dexterity sheets we didn't do?
Dude, where do you think I got it from, bro? Where do you think I got the idea from? Straight copyright.
the man used to put us on tech. I was like, you need to do this. And he just worked us. And the things that when we were trying, we thought were impossible, double tapping both hands, or double tapping one hand whilst the other hand is moving on its own up and down. All these dexterity things that if you just said to someone, are you ambidextrous? And you said, do this, they would fail. But then you put the marimba sticks and you tell them, do this, all of a sudden they're doing what is considered being ambidextrous. But it was because he had literally trained us, and like drill sergeant in the army, marine style training. But then not only was it because he moneyballed the team, but then the characters that we were added benefits. That it was a good thing that TJ and Kudasekeso was extremely lanky and tall, and so when they moved their bodies in a funny way, it was dramatic. They had dramatized themselves.
That's true.
You know, making faces, you know, to up there in the front on the soprano going ham. It was character. He allowed us to use our character in playing the music. It just didn't end at the music. We were allowed to be who we were, but at the same time playing the music.
Interesting. Vale, what do you think of that money ball? Because I know that must have got you, that must have piqued your interest there.
I think Moneyball is the right term, because it was a mishmash of different characters, different skill levels, different aptitudes. But I think one thing Manos may have seen or inadvertently bumped into was that everyone in there appreciated nerd culture. So there was a certain appreciation for things that were unconventional. Because at the time we were doing it, John's, it wasn't the most popular thing. Even in the first iteration of the senior band, it took some time for the rest of the school to kind of see, like, these guys are legit. We were never paid too much mind, but after, you know, being a collection of people who were interested in very niche things, this one niche thing that, you know, unified us together made us work at that a lot better. So maybe that was Manu's psychology, or that was just basically, you know, him stumbling onto the right people at the right time. Which, characters wise, it was pretty interesting. And it was, again, diverse skill sets, because what made Sean good was the fact that he understood pitch. He sang, so he understood, you know, where to stay in key. He is an actor, so he understands how to, until the Stedfords remove dramatization, but he understood how
the way with the performance art. Like, he was the one who got us all out of our shell.
Not me.
In the performance.
Hey, oh no, not me. I have the performance aptitude of a teaspoon. I refused. My rebellion still continues to that effect. But not to say I didn't try.
What, sir?
I'm saying I have the performance aptitude of a teaspoon. So he tried but failed.
Hey man, it's okay to confess.
Yeah, we're all friends here. We're all friends here.
It's a safe place. This is a safe place.
It's a safe space. Yeah, but definitely.
We knew, buddy. We knew.
So basically, Sean was great at what he did. And I think still is.
Just being kind all those times.
I know. Because it was, the whole conversation was, if I let's smile, I'm like, dude, you know, I'm at work here. Like, all I'm thinking about is timing. So you all want me to be smiling and happy while I'm thinking about timing. Like, I don't know how Rangers did it, though, because Rangers had to play the instrument that was responsible for timing. Like, how the hell did this mofo, number one, continue to be this jovial? And number two, he's responsible for keeping us all on time. I am just a clutch. He's the master cylinder. I'm the slave cylinder. I have to make sure, DG, we continue, but he's running the tempo. I'm like, how the hell was this nigga doing it? Like, what kind of weed is this? Like, whoever his dealer is, please reach out, because I need some of this. I really need some of this.
Yeah. That's so true.
It was confusing to see. And I think that's the beauty of it, is that it all of it ended up just working. And, you know, even when we're two bands in one, again, somehow it worked. And I think as well, between the two, two sides, there was not much of a dividing line, because, again, a bunch of nerds. I'm guessing, you know, if you're going to create, if you're going to go back in time, or get our skill levels to the point that they were now, that they were then, to this point, right? And then made us play. That'll be quite formidable. Like, that'll be up there with anything that's been around, because everybody, they knew what they were doing. You know, even Antenna, your granddad, who we had his weird timing, but again, it made sense. It made sense. Like, you're like, that made sense. Made sense. Chimuta was an interesting creature, but it made sense. And these guys who played, he played guitar. The way he interpreted timing was just completely different to how we did, but then somehow it melded and gelled. So, you know, and even the whole playing of it, like, I don't remember Blessing at the second camp when Blessing played drums. And Blessing is seeing stars with dexterity. And I'm like, bro, you play drums. Like, how can you be seeing fire with dexterity? And he's like, bro, this is a whole different ball game. And that's what it was, is getting the rhythmic side of it right before you could end up, you know, getting to the complicated music theory and all that. But somehow that ragtag band of 12 people managed to make it work for whatever reason.
Yeah.
That was a very good look. That's the thing where you was a mad genius with it, because that Mombe Mumunda, that year of Mombe Mumunda, Rangers, remember when he started teaching us that song? And I was I remember thinking to myself, like, this guy is crazy. This is what is this? This is crazy. This is like, he was really out there teaching this. And then when it was coming together, I was like, yo, you might have something here. I don't know.
Mm.
This is crazy. It doesn't make sense. The song is 10 times. The timing is 10 bars. This is crazy. Like, but the more it came together, the more it began to be like, maybe, just maybe, this is something special. And then afterwards, when we got the cup, I was like, oh my gosh, that worked.
Yep.
That actually worked.
Oh yeah. He, like I said, he moneyboard, and then he made us become masters of the instrument that we had chosen. So for Tutu, you know, he made you a master of the soprano. For me, it was a tenor, valet, it was the bass, and also the baritone. And then once you were comfortable with your position, you then found freedom with, let me go and try and play the baritone. And then all of a sudden, you're seeing Tutu, he's playing the baritone, but technically he's on soprano. But now, we can go to the soprano, the thing, like, we could move around and people could play their parts and hold him. I was like, no, me, I'm 10. I will hold. I am the Xavi. I'll be the Xavi of the team. I'll play in the mid. I'll play in the midfield and hold the team. He really allowed us to find our space and find. It sounds weird because it's an instrument, but it's still in musical terms. He helped us find what was our voice with the instruments. Yeah.
Valley was traveling around on the instruments. He made you a master of a very wide range.
Valley wanted to know everything on every instrument.
Yeah, it was a disease, man. Still have it. But I think it was more the case of the one instrument.
As
I never...
we used to call it, he was an eagle beaver.
Exactly.
Oh yes.
It was an eagle beaver.
Yeah, that's what it was, man. That's what it was. It was difficult not to. It was difficult. I think it was
hard. About this.
It was hard not to want to learn it, though.
Oh,
like,
man, I apologize for that, man. I'm so sorry you said that.
But it was accurate, though. Like, it was to the point, because I was just, you know, it was one of the things where Tutu would start doing something. And I'm like, okay, what the hell is he doing? And I look at it, I'm trying to process it in my head. I'm like, okay, all right, okay. And it starts slowing down in my head. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I'm interested, but not really curious enough to want to learn it. Because at that time, there wasn't enough time to then do something else. You had to cover your own bases. And Manos would want you to execute on a certain level with whatever you were doing. So, but there were things where he would do it, and I'm like, what the hell? And then I'd have to go just to look and then see and then try. Because it, I don't know how to describe how it sounded. But the one instrument I never ever got the hang of was soprano, because I get distracted a lot, like while playing. So I kind of drift into what everybody else is doing in the lines. So for me to lead a line is completely, it's impossible. It is impossible. You go down, if you guys know when I started improvising, we would go down roads, ended up at Kwanda Vilagwareba, and then wind up somehow in C, and we're like, okay, how the hell did we get here? So yeah, soprano was never my jam. Yeah, playing it, yeah, it's doable, but not necessarily for me. But it was, I don't know, it was just that, again, the environment that Manus creates, that he will never limit what you can do. So if you want to try it out, knock yourself out. Like, as long as you're doing what you need to be doing, if you've got the time to be looking around, then yeah, knock yourself out. And then if it helps you doing what you're doing right now, then yeah, that's exactly what it was. And it's like Tudor started on tenor and then moved to soprano. But never really started from learning baritone. And you'd see him on days playing bass, trying to get, you know, and you try to wonder, why? Like that's my shtick. Can you stay in your lane? You can only have one person here.
I used to steal variations too, because I used to like learning certain variations. They sounded cool. I'll be listening to it, and then I'll play it, or at least try to play it at some point. Because especially the baritone, I just like the way the baritone sounded. So the variations on the bass sounded cool. So that's why I was always on the baritone.
Definitely makes sense.
Yeah,
baritone was the backbone, so you know it, some of the variations that they played, it I not drive the band as such, but it's there's a variation envy, where you envy the kind of, you know, little touches it gets, the prolonged resonance the keys give. Might not be doing anything spectacular, but it's just like what you said, how it sounded. If it sounds a certain way, then damn, yeah, you're gonna. I don't wonder, but tenor was the cheat code. I remember when Mombe Munda was being taught, I think you, Tudu and Rangas, you two introduced it first. I don't know which session it was, but I remember coming in and I'm like, and in my older head, the only drug I can think of that's appropriate is spice. Like, who the hell gave Mano spice? Because this sounds nothing like anything I've heard before in my life. And I was trying to see people catching, like trying to come up to speed with it. And the baritone variation was just something else. Like, I don't know if the musical term is staccato. I don't know if that is, but the choppiness of it was like, is it seriously going to teach us this? And I, you know, you guys were playing the skeleton of it while I was listening. I'm like, how the hell is he going to fill this out? They're not enough. Like, we're going to need, like, you know, probably four to three tenors, three sopranos to probably fill out the rest of the sound, because it's going to sound a little bit weird. But for whatever reason, it worked. And I guess in large part was to how the baritone lines were crafted. Was how it made. So again, is that variation envy, that the baritone got some really, really cool stuff to play around with. And the instrument itself, you know, RIP Barry Senior, whichever German airport you're still at, or wherever.
Ay, man, we have to do that.
You gotta bring it back. Man.
That's a touch. Let's just move on. Okay, I'm still not over that. That was the greatest baritone ever, and it disappeared.
That sucked. You know, I was kind of hurt. I didn't go to that Germany trip. I think Rangers, you went on, right? The trip to Germany in 2006-07. How was it though?
Yeah, I can't. Which one? The Germany trip.
Yeah. Yeah, did you go on that one?
Yeah, that's the one you went on, Rangers, right?
Yes, I did. I felt like, well, because when we went, we had now been to the Chamber of Secrets, so now we felt like a superhuman. Because now you're showing people, and all they're doing is ding, ding, and you're like, oh, these peasants, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they do and how much potential they have. We're like, let me save them. And you're like showing them, and then you're like trying to make them understand just the basic variation. And then they play, and then Mr. Manmano would then take us, and then we'd then play, we'd do the presentation, and everyone was like, oh my God, like, this is amazing. How, like, I remember, like, if there was ever a time where, you know, we kind of experienced what it's like to have fans, that's the first time where you had people actually fanning over you, like, oh my God, you're so amazing. You played the instrument. You're like, really? I just played something that was very basic. Like, that was nothing. That's not even the hardest thing. But people were, like, so blown away. And it was amazing to see people appreciate the music and us playing the music with them and for them. It was an amazing, it was also a highlight. That's why I said, for me, all my high school memories, including all of those, they are linked. Marimba is somewhere in the picture. Marimba is somewhere nearby, whether we're playing it or we're going to play it at some point, marimba is somewhere, because that's when we did crazy. Like, for me, I think one of the highlights, I remember when we went to MCC, guys, the way that crowd, I will never forget the way that crowd went wild.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I was about to get to that. Because when you said, that, oh, these peasants, they don't know what they're doing. that was that feeling. Because that performance, when we told the guy, turn the lights off, and then we're going to start playing when the lights are off and the curtains are down, and then when we start playing, lift the curtains and then put the light on us, like the fact that we got the guy to do that for us, that was one thing. Yeah. And when they started cheering, it was like, yes, cheer for us. We are great.
Guys, can I tell you a story I haven't told you?
Like,
can I tell you a story I haven't told either of you? So I got the flip side of that MCC trip. So homie of mine, we were at MGI together. He was doing marketing, I was doing law. And he was like, we were jamming FIFA this one Saturday. And he was like, you know what? One time these guys from John's came by, these Rimba boys from John's came by. And I was like, oh, hell no. Do I up myself here? His name is Tabiso. So he was like, these dudes came by and the women went crazy. They literally went crazy. And those guys were rock stars for that moment. And I was like, dude, what if I told you that I was one of those guys? He's like, what if I let you in a secret? Like, I was one of those guys. He's like, I know it's impossible. Then I took out the Kutinya Marimba YouTube. Then he saw the performance. He's like, Vale, seriously, how did you keep quiet? I'm like, dude, it was just what we did. He's like, you guys have no idea what kind of a ruckus you guys caused when you're in Midlands Christian College. You have no idea what you guys did that side. And to this day, he still reminds me, like, bruh. Yeah, what you did that night. Yeah, not a lot of people will forget that.
Nah, I know that night was monumental. That is crazy to hear that, dude.
Because it happened to me too. Some guy on Twitter that I was talking to was like, "Yeah, I went to MCC, and one year these owns from John's, they came through and caused had this ill marimba performance, caused all the honeys to go crazy." And I was like, yeah, that was me, man. I had no idea, dude. Because to us, it was like, hey, look, man, this happens. Like, come on, this is like, whatever, man. We do this all the time. Mm. So when we did that at that time, it was like, it was crazy, to be honest. I've never seen a crowd go crazy like that.
Yeah, I've never seen a crowd.
But, to be honest, that was genius. Switch the lights off and start with Diwali, and then put the curtains down and just play Diwali in the dark. Come on, dog. That was genius. That was the thing that man has put a battery in all of our backs, the creativity, because we weren't the most talented, like I said. Dexterity-wise, PE would run circles around us, for sure.
Yeah, all the time.
In terms of playing those kind of songs or whatever. But creativity was our thing. We were creative in how we presented ourselves. And that's something that man has put a battery in our back, in terms of just every practice when we were doing Aesthetics, you always be like, hey, performances. I hate that word. To the point I hated that word for a good minute because he kept saying it, performances, add more performances, more, it was like something he drilled in us all the time. Like, you can play a song perfectly and be like, there's no performances, you're not performing. And, you know, so the fact that we were able to do that, I can see why they went crazy. I'm not going to lie to you. But I just had no idea it was that, like I had no idea it was that crazy. It was just,
I had no idea. I haven't met someone, but hey, I guess somewhere out there, you know, somebody's like, damn, those niggas, man.
Yeah, and also a small shout out. I spoke about Kui a while back about how Kui was the dude who basically gave us no fear to do anything. I think Kui and Sean, whenever they had consensus, because they never really agreed on a number on things consistently, but whenever consensus was reached on something, it was always good. Like, and I think that performance was part of it. I'm not going to talk about the night of when I woke up with toothpaste on my face for whatever reason after playing the whole night. Stormtroopers, never sleep amongst the boys was a lesson I learned.
Yeah, man,
I forgot about that too.
Yeah, never sleep amongst the boys. If you're gonna be on an all night, it's an all night prayer, guys. You gotta be up. Gotta be up.
We won't talk about it. Don't worry, we won't talk about it.
But like, it's good. It was good to see that Kui was the very adventurous person. I guess a sense of not having fear, probably a case of just, you know, a healthy dose of confidence. But then, you know, that was sort of malformed, and then Sean could give it the performance art that it needed for it to work and for it to happen. And I guess it rubbed off on us when then they eventually left. Then we had to take it on ourselves. I guess, you know, the example was something that was really good to follow. Although we could never replicate what Kui was because, something else.
Yeah, it rubbed off. And I think for me, I remember when it comes to performances, we set ourselves such a high standard every year. Like, we were like, what we did last year, we can't do again. That's that. Whatever song we were going to perform, the song, we were like, cool, we'll learn the song. But the performance around it, we were like, we have to do something new, something. What hasn't been done? Like, and that's when we started doing the wild things. That's when we started, like, let's lift the marimbas and have someone play the marimbas whilst we're starting the song. Let's play it in reverse and then put it in fast forward. And you're like all these ideas started to pop up because we were just like, you know what? We are going to make it a performance that people will not forget. It has to go beyond just the song that we're playing. And like Tutu said, Mr. Manman would, he put pressure on us. He's like, but I think you can do something more. You can do something more. Go back, think something. You're like, dude, I thought I just like put my foot like this. I just did this. And now it's cool. do something more.
And this was after the rule rewrite, after the rules for the Estetfords were rewritten to remove dramatization. So you had to do this while playing. It couldn't be a case of you had to do this, you know, when the music stopped. This still had to be some continuation of the playing while it happened. So it just got a little bit harder to figure out. So everything had to be incorporated into the music. So you then had to find transitions that slowed the tempo or sped it up to wherever you wanted to be in terms of your visual performance. Mm.
And we made it, like, we changed, at least from what I was seeing afterwards, you know, after that performance in 2007, I think, or the moment, whenever that we did moment, after that performance, it became very clear, you know, the influence that it had on other bands, you know. A lot more bands were doing gimmicks, you know, there was a lot more gimmicks involved now with bands. And there was more coordinated performances when you're playing, you know, there was a lot more of that. And I was watching it like, I don't know, a few years ago. And I was seeing some of the videos. I'm like, yo, this is us. I was like looking at like three bands and I'm like, yeah, this is all, you know, rimbing. They're all doing rimbing things. They're all, you know, there's a gimmick here. There's a movement here. There's drama faces here. And it was really nice to see just how much of an influence we had, because it went from just playing marimbas, right, to now, okay, make it interesting and keep it within the playing, because that's what Manos said, you know, like Vale said, you know, the dramatization and stuff. Mm. Yeah, to make it interesting. But you know, there was a lot of bands that were influenced by us, and then there's some who just refuse to evolve.
Watershed. Watershed.
The watershed of the world.
Shots fired. Shots fired.
I'm not a fan of I get it, it gets results, people like it, but I've never been a fan since day one. We were never a fan of that. I remember that was a collective thing within our band. All of us, most of us were worried about marimbas in general. Some of us took it seriously, but we were all in consensus about Shed and the way they played drums.
Except one person.
Still there to this day.
Except one person.
Aren't they the ones who had a weird coach as well? They have a weird coach.
Yeah, his way of playing was quite interesting. Honestly, there was one person who did not reach consensus and one person who got an earful when he came back with a Watershed variation at the practice after Stepford's. Fana Washaya.
Who?
Washaya. Remember Washaya came back with that variation they were playing. And I was like, dude, like, did you not get the message? Did you not get the memo? No one's about this. Like, respect to them, but you know, that is not our way. Let that be their way. But I respect Washaya as well, because he kind of saw the art in it, and you know, that's great, but yeesh, dude.
Is it me or maybe I'm remembering the wrong thing? They used to just play the Mighty Samba Show song all the time.
Yeah, got to that point.
That's them.
That goddamn drunk.
That's what I remember. And it's like every year, I go, man, and I, hey.
Yeah. Like it had to, some variation of the song had to feature in whatever song they were doing. It was their thing.
Yeah, it's funny though that there's, like what Manos was trying to do was bring so much of Zimbabwean folklore into rimbas, like update some of the songs that was like Nimamsasa. We got to 17 versions of it, and if you'd hear 17.1, you wouldn't know it was the same song. But you'd see the thing was not to let these sort of little elements die, and weirdly enough, we're vessels of that, because we know Nimamsasa because we played it, so it's more likely our kids are gonna know about it at some point. So we were kind of holding the heritage of the stuff you're trying to bring through from African folk, from Zimbabwean folklore actually, into rimbas, and then to be passed on, because it's a song that you can't forget how to play because it's pretty simple, the original version. But the way he then started, you know, upscaling it and upscaling and upscaling it to the point where, there's a video of Tutu playing Nimamsasa on Tena. No, it was a soprano version. I don't remember if I still have that video. If I do, I'll probably link it. But yeah, we were vessels
playing
of that.
What, sorry?
And Nimamsasa, 17.1 before 17.4 came out.
2.1.
Oh, 2.1.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's interesting the way Watershed was kind of against that, because they brought pop culture, pop music, or, you know, easily identifiable music into it. And it lacked that depth because it was, I don't know, the best way I can explain it is that the way African folk songs are sung is voices are instruments. So whatever you do around that, you're just enhancing the original core. You can mess around timing, tempo, and whatever, but you're playing to that same sort of degree of texture. I don't know if that makes sense, but it makes sense in my head. But with the pop stuff is you're limited to, the biggest failing is that, will the soprano be playing the lead guitar variation or the vocals? If you have the lead soprano playing the vocals and the backup soprano playing the lead guitar variation, whatever that is, it then does not sound right, because there's both instruments are supposed to fortify one another. So in isolation, it doesn't work, but together they kind of complement, hence why most of the songs are structured that way. So in essence, it's a choir, which is something that I, from the time that I knew Shed, didn't quite get, because they sounded vastly different and not in the best of ways, in my opinion, to everybody else. But it wasn't something that
they weren't. No, go on, Valis.
I'm saying it wasn't something that I felt that was true to what we're trying to do, because it's kind of like an ensemble of Big Ambira, basically. It's Big Ambira doing their thing. So I'm not saying, you know, there's no room for experimentation and all that, but it's kind of like the same respect that classical musicians give, you know, ensembles and, you know, stuff by Debussy, Mozart, and all those niggas. The kind of respect they give that is kind of the way that the Stepford's Platinum was supposed to be, for this very small pool of music that was getting lost to be kind of sort of revived in one way or another. So if you didn't get the song, in essence, you got the texture and the feel of that kind of background, if I guess if that makes sense. So Shade was kind of a disruptor to that, and for to me, not in the best of ways. It kind of took away from that, and the argument that, that Rangers brought earlier, which we didn't have to play Diwali to be cool. You know, they kind of, you know, went against that, and P as well moved away from that as well, because they were the big band at that time, and they stopped playing, you know, the poppy, you know, in the mix sort of songs. They started playing more to the traditional style, of which it needed ample representation. So Shade was just, it was a weird place. I didn't know where to put them. I was like, yeah, no, okay. Yeah, you know, the playing is good, but it's just that the motif is not for where you are. Like, it's kind of like read a room. That, like, not being able to read a room or even the Steadfast rule book, but it doesn't say you can't do this or that. But again, paying that homage to, you know, the dwindling level of interest and preservation to the music that was trying to be preserved is just, yeah, my one.
Yeah.
Right. I wanted to shift to a favorite song. I know everyone has different favorite songs. Vale, you know mine already. But what was everyone's favorite song that they remember just playing?
The name misses me at the moment, but I know the baritone. Ding, ding, ding. Ding, 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 ding. What's that?
Oh, Tundera Mwanangu, yeah, Tundera
Mwanangu. I just love the vibe, because it sounds so chill, and depending on the band, you could play it chill the whole way. You could just chill, doing cool things, and just almost like jazzy. Like you could jazz the song where you're just, you know, playing it chill, then the soprano goes wild for a little bit, tenor does something, baritone, we draw something, bass, and it doesn't go anywhere. And then you could, if you wanted to, you could play it fast. You could be like, ah, no, we started slow, but we could speed it up. And I loved the colors, the different things you could do with that song. So for me, yeah, that's one of my favorite, if not my favorite song of all time.
Yeah,
good song. That's a good song. That was one of those songs I wish we learned in school. We learned it afterwards, but I wish we learned it while we were still playing. So that was a song. Yeah. We just didn't have the time to learn it. That was the problem. But I wish we learned that song, because it was a really good song, man. Really good song. There's so many different things that can go on with that song. Vale, what was yours?
For me, I've got two. No, not two, but two. The way I view the songs is a song I enjoyed listening to and a song I enjoyed playing. So, the song I enjoyed listening to was Ishe Komborera, the OG version they played on the CD. That was probably one of the best songs in terms of how it transitioned. Then we kind of replicated that to a certain degree. And then to play was obviously Kwanda, because Kwanda is just a blueprint of doing so many things. I wish I had the time I could write a book about, you know, all the things you could do with Kwanda. If you didn't know G major, guy, to be honest, if you didn't understand how to work within G major and all the nooks and crevices and crannies, Kwanda will teach you almost everything you need to know. If you learned Kwanda properly, you could play Tsigamiso with no hassle. You could play Siaso, to be honest, with no hassle, because timing Yacho, it's in my sections, I go to the timing is a bit weird and you need to be disciplined more than adventurous. So, yeah, for me, those are the two.
Yeah, that's a good choice there. Kwanda's a good song. Kwanda, that's my favorite one right there. Kwanda's my favorite one. My favorite one to listen to, I want to start with that one, because my favorite one to listen to is probably CSO. Because when you learn that song, when you hear that song being played at there's a few times where we were at a gig one time. I don't know if Rangers, you were there, but we had a gig. Vale, do you remember there's a gig we had at, where was it? Somewhere. With Manos and Zed. Oh, yeah. It was Meekles. I think it was Meekles, but it was downstairs.
Aye.
With Manos, Zed, and who else was there?
Was Gunman still there?
We was there. Gunman, I think, I don't know, yeah, but they came and joined us, or something like that. And I was on soprano with Zed, and we're playing CSO. Man, the tangent he went on, he went on a tangent that I'll never forget. it was like I was playing, you know, your arms just couldn't move fast enough. It really just felt like there was a train was going without me. I was just there playing chords. So I'm like, you know what, let me just play chords and then, you know, we'll see this out. But that song, when it's played at an elite level, that song is really nice to listen to. But to play, it's, for me, it's Kwanda. That was a really nice song to play. Because there was just enough gap for you to be able to go somewhere with it. And then there was the climax where the thing changed. The variation changed. And that's when everybody said, right. now we can freestyle. That one was the favorite one as a band. That's where it became my favorite, because as a band, that was the one song we used to chisa with any band, really, with the Koye band, and then later with Anambombe. We used to kill that song. And every time, the reason why I knew we used to kill it was because every time that variation came in from the baritone, everybody would go on their own tangent after that. Everybody went on their own tangent. That was the signal. It was
open season.
The first 2 minutes of the song, you're just really playing the parts. Everybody's being, you know, everybody's coexisting. Nobody's getting each other's way. The soprano's doing his thing. Then the baritone says, right, everybody can do your thing now. Now ones are going on tangent. There's one time Vale was going nuts on the bass. Uku, just playing these crazy variations. Anyway. That song, that was a good song to play. I really liked that song. And that was the hardest song for us to learn for whatever reason. I remember the grind of trying to learn that song. And then finally, and when Manos then looked at us and said, hey, these ones are now playing this item properly. That's when I was like, wow, okay. That was a supreme confidence booster for us all at that time.
Side note. Was it Emmanuel's way of saying you're doing well when he just left the Rimba room? He's like, guys, you're doing well, and he bounced. Because every time we did well, he would never stick around. Because I remember the session he heard us playing after Dexterity. He came in, you guys are playing the song well now, and he flicked. We saw him, I think, 15 minutes towards the end of practice, just coming to check in on what was going on. Mm. But like every time we did something right or we played something really well, he would not stick around for long. He'd be like, okay, I think I've taught these guys enough. I got other stuff to do. They seem to have this handled. Again, another testament to the man. He knew how to give responsibility when he knew these guys kind of have it handled. He was never overbearing, so he gave you more room to learn. But then he would just come and then school you with another song. You'd be like, Christ, dude, what? You went to have lunch. How in the hell did you learn this? Or did you think about this in the 1.5 hours you were away?
Yeah, he always, I like what you're saying there, Fabi. He always, he allowed you to grow, so he'd introduce us to the song, we'd learn it, if it was difficult, we'd power our way through it until we figured it out. And then just when you're like, I reached Mount Everest, then he'd be like, no, let's climb higher. You're like, but dude, I just got here.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, boys, we're starting. He's like, we're going to play a song that has 9 bars. That is like, you're like, dude. Come on. What 9? Like, how? When? Is that even possible? And then all of a sudden, you're there. He's playing it. And he's like, okay, this is the soprano part. Right. This is the tenor. Right. This is the baritone. And now you're now back at the bottom of the mountain and you're now climbing up again. You're like,
yeah. And it didn't.
I'll never forget how he opened that Mombe Munda variation on you tenor ones. I was seeing stars. He opened that first tenor.
Segeso's face.
I'm going to tell you something. I'm done. I'm a guy.
Segeso's face. Could I say Segeso's face?
The Arab for yours, because yours was seeing so much flames. You had to simplify the Arab.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that. That was Mothers. He was an evil genius like that.
Yeah.
He overestimated on in that moment, because he thought Ons were going to be able to play, but the stars also seeing.
Yeah, I remember Kudasekisu's face forever burnt in my mind when he got that first variation. I was like, yeah, the defeat was just like, what the hell is this now? Like, what? Why? Why? But I guess when everybody got it.
Manus was crazy.
Yeah, you're right. It was simplified because the true version of the song is the one we learned then later. I think when we were teaching was when we learned the true second half of the song, because the variations were vastly different from the performance version to the one, you know, that was on the tape. And I think nobody taught us those variations. I think it was listening to the tape and then, because it was those car rides with Tutu, that you'd play the music and then listen to the variations. And at some point, you have to figure out where you are and where you're going to come in and what your variation sounds like. So, yeah, not getting formal teaching in that and kind of getting close to it was mildly impressive.
Hey, bro, those days, that's, I'm glad you brought that up. We're going to go into that for a little bit. Those days, like right after that gap year, we all took a gap year. Man, the level of dexterity we reached that year.
Got here.
Yeah, no, we were learning songs every week as well. That was when I knew that we were now processing information quickly. Because we'll be in the car and we'll be listening to those variations and then we'll be like, oh, and then we'll play Tondera. That's how we learned Tondera. That's how we learned the others, half of Mombe Munda.
You know,
it was those sessions, just learning all those variations and then just having those jam sessions.
Yeah, the jam sessions. Yeah, that was like, yeah, I made it. I don't have to prove myself anymore.
Yeah, although I've got one gripe.
That was the greatest feeling.
I've got one gripe with both of you.
What?
The gripe is, during that gap year and that teaching gap year, y'all left me alone for like, there was this, there are two events. The first, second one I won't talk about alive. I still hold a grudge. The first recurring event was that Tudu then got a job elsewhere, which kept him away for a little bit. And then Rangers was I think you were doing debate. You were with the
yes,
debate
I
team.
Was, yeah.
And we'll just mention Rangers, you got what, four colors, which is like one away from a black blazer. And I remember the day that happened, I was like,
oh, man, that's please. A cool spot, man. Ooh. I was going to become the first guy to get a black blazer with all what's it called, arts things and what's the name? The lady. He said, he didn't sing in choir enough. So no one.
Dude, because I remember, what was it? The date was announced. It was Gwinyaranga and I, Full Colors and Debate. Gwinyaranga and I, Full Colors and Marimbas. Mm-hmm. I'm like, hey. And it was like DJ running back. And I was like, you know, but that's true for another day.
Yeah, that's a story for another day.
Rangers at Debate. We had a job. And it was like, you get the graveyard shift at the beginning of a session where these ladies would hate you because you know you're starting with dexterity. We did not have a song. You're starting with dexterity. And you know what? I had to make the best of a bad situation. I'm like, you know what? You got me, right? We don't have a song. We've been talking about a song.
The morning sucked, man. Now you have to teach these people. Like, what? Please continue. I understand your grievances.
Because it was like, yo, you get the graveyard shift, and then you get, you're like, and you know, you're trying to get them into like some sort of shape to be able to do what they do best. Because these guys were like the band that we taught was uber talented, like ridiculously talented. So you're trying to make that talent work hard, because I think to some degree they knew that they were really good. So it was just that whole point of like, hey, you know, you get the, and we'd been discussing about a song for a really long time. We didn't have anything, but you had to put, I think instilling discipline in them was the hardest thing to do, because I'm not disciplined as a human being. Mm. I'm ungovernable by nature, and trying to convey something that is not your core principles to people who can clearly see that you're a rebel is totally not the easiest thing in the world to do. But I guess it's a good learning experience, to be part of that session. So by the time we actually got playing stuff, the incremental improvements were there. And then Udud and Rangers would just show up, you know, once the bass had been laid. And these niggas are now just flexing. Like, you know, you guys are doing well. You guys are doing great. And I'm like, these mother bleep. Y'all were not here for one and a quarter hours of this nonsense. These niggas did not just arrive to this point. Bashandu up against.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, man. I really... That was, those lessons, man. I'm sorry. Those are tough, man. Those are tough. Yeah, I feel your pain there. I feel your pain. Those morning sessions in the morning, you know, you're not even awake yet, really. Now you have to deal with, you know, a fun hour. You have to have a lesson plan. And the lesson plan, actually, you're making it on the fly because you were worried. So no. And you have at least to do lessons. You need to do the thing afterwards as well.
Yeah.
You start the practice as well. That was what I remember. So yeah, Valet was doing a lot of the practices. Yeah, I appreciate
it. I
understand your grievances, my man. I see where you're coming from.
Appreciation, not appreciated. Appreciation, not appreciated.
We left you to drive with that one, man. That was a tough time for you.
Yeah, but it is what it was. I guess, you know, it was just the consequence of the times. We're all pulling in different directions. And yeah, you know what?
Yeah,
it was bound to happen.
Nah, but it was a good time though. That was a fun year. Just, you know, running around, doing a lot of marimbas and different things. It was just first time being real busy in the real world and making, and the fact that marimbas was like at the centerpiece of that was actually kind of fun.
Mm.
I enjoyed
it.
Yeah,
I remember those days. My guys tried to come with Kamari. You remember?
Yeah, that's
true. I remember that day after I think we got paid and we drove to Pomona and we stood by the door like, yo. Buy anything right now.
Yeah. First time getting our own. Yeah, it was first time earning your own money. It was freedom, man.
It was freedom. Yeah.
It was real freedom. It was first time doing it for us. That was. Mm. I remember those moments, man. It was a good time. It was definitely a good time,
man. It was a good time.
Super side note.
Nah, but you know that what's. Go on, man.
So a couple of weeks ago, I was at Old Mutual Business Park, right? And I remembered they were launching this solar thingy, but I don't know. But I was paying half attention to other things. So when I drove in, I was like, this place seems familiar for whatever reason. And I've been here a bunch of times, but I can't quite put my finger on how. And then a rainbow went off in my head. I'm like, right, I remember. These were those run days with Tutu. When we used to do runs in between lessons. Now I get why this place is significant. now it all makes sense. It should have still there. They dropped over. Oh, okay. Yeah, the experience there. That those flashbacks, I have them often now because I'm going to more and more places where I then realize, we did this there. Like Meagles, I think I had 3 or 4 gigs in Meagles. So Meagles is a place that we could never really, I can't really forget without ever getting a flashback, even if I drive past. Similarly as well, it's kind of like, it's different now, I mean, to what it was before, but that spot's still the same. And we had a couple of gigs there, and you kind of remember, okay, damn. We did some stuff.
Yeah, we played for a lot of events.
Yeah, even Avondale, bro. Remember that TM gig when before Food Lovers came there and took that spot in Papawari's.
Oh yeah, I think we had to play. Was it the whole morning or something? We got there like at 8 or 9, and we played until late. I don't know what time.
Yeah, I played late. It was really interesting. Like it was. Crazy the amount of places that the amount of spots we posted up. But now when I think about them, when I'm being older, I'm like, hey, but bruh, yeah, we've been around. Because those events paid. And I'm sorry, white people paid money. Like I don't want to sound racist or anything, but when you say this is what you do, right? They don't necessarily put the same level of value that white people do on African arts. Because white ones will pay you a premium.
Yeah.
They'll pay you a premium. And we'll be flush for days. Although that money, I would never ambush sugar, but I mean, we'll be flush for days.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a good experience, just reliving those moments. Yeah. Although looking back, I'd imagine that we'd have done something different in Mariachi.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, for a hot minute, it looked like... it was a possibility to make it like a career, like to actually just carry on playing marimbas and making. And I'm sure whenever you have Mr. Manmano on the podcast, it would be interesting to find out his perspective on that. Did he have potential sides to these boys if I keep them talking out to push and carry on and make this and travel the world?
Yeah, I guess it might have been a thought that crossed his mind, but I think towards the end he kind of sort of put the foot off the gas, because I think he realized that, yeah, the demands that we were getting at home were a bit different of what we're supposed to do with our lives. It became a reality really quickly that, yeah, Rangus was going to be a lawyer. Like, it was your passion from a very early age. You were a great debater. So it was one of the things that I knew that, yeah, it's kind of like where he's going to go. Turu still has a passion for it. But I think it's just extenuating circumstances.
Tutu, it's in his blood, it's in his DNA, he sleeps, drinks it, it's everywhere.
Yeah. Me personally, I have no idea, man. Like, I what we do it now, like, it's just I'm in the mood to experiment. I'm trying to enter my 30s, you know, being in a very open-minded, experimentative kind of vibe. Like, just take things as they are, kind of try and enjoy it as much as you can. Because I've never been one for formal professions. I feel like if a job's not offering me the flexibility to do, not to do what I want to do, but to be able to fulfill the company mandate as well as be able to express myself to the degree that I think makes sense, then I ain't sticking around.
Yeah.
I ain't really sticking around. Because, you don't want to be shackled. I don't feel like I want to be shackled for any length of time. So you never know. You might just reunite the band when Rangers has made enough paper to stack away for the fam. Because, you know, being a 1 year, you know, I think you're still new to it, right? Because a year is not, it's a milestone. But
yeah, but
But that's interesting though. Like, how is that transition? Because I remember Jirang, the individual. I cannot for the life of me imagine the married man. Like, for me, that's a foreign concept.
Life has, you know, when you find the right one, it clicks. And I think I was talking to my wife about this recently, to say, you know, you find that all with a friend, like, you're my boys, you'll always be my boys. Remember, guys, like, if I see you anywhere, whoever, Lawi, whoever, you always be like the guys, but, you know, you're like, yeah, this is the person I'm gonna be with, and it's a journey, but when you put in the work, like for me and my wife, we're always telling people, hey, put in the work, put in the time, you'll reap the fruits.
Mm.
You'll always reap the fruit. So for me, it's been good. It's been good, and we're looking forward to whatever the future holds. Mm. We're here in Zimbabwe at the moment. We don't have plans to vacate the premises, as it were, at the present moment. So we're good. But yeah, you'll always, like you're saying, there's always that pull. It's in our muscles, our blood. I to this day, like, if I get just randomly bored, I'm waiting for a meeting, or I'm waiting to go into court, and I've answered all the messages on my phone, I'll literally just start tapping on my legs, start tapping a beat. I'll be like, you know, I'm air whimpering right now. There's a song that I'm playing, because it's literally it's drilled into, like, somewhere in our DNA. We created a new block of DNA that specifically is triggered by marimbas. Because for me, just to start tapping a little bit, and just start like, oh, if I move my hand here, I'm hitting this chord, and then, oh, what if I did this? But then it's just, the unfortunate part is you're doing it, but there's no instrument, so you don't really know what it would actually sound like in real life. but because you have that freedom, the Chamber of Secrets, you can kind of guess, I'm doing what I'm doing. Mm. This is what it would probably sound like, if not a little bit better. Mm. So it will always be there. I'm always wondering. I don't know. I'm on that side where I'm like, I don't know if you put the sticks in my hands, you just say play this song right now. I'm like, play your part in this song. I might need to dust off the rust and relearn, but I'm sure that muscle memory, the memories, the part that has all that information stored will wake up like an old dusty machine. Like, is this happening? And just like, you know, riding a bike after many years, all of a sudden you find yourself, I still got it. So it is an amazing thing. It was an amazing time. When we were learning this instrument that is a marimba.
Yeah, most certainly was. Looks like our boy Tutu is indisposed at the moment, so I'm gonna have to take over his hosting duties. Angus, thank you very much, man. I still owe you a beer. I remember I promised that would go out. Not a beer as such, but I owe you the cold beverage of your choice. But when I sent that text, my life just took a tailspin to somewhere else. So I do still owe you that.
My life gets empty.
Yeah, so I still owe you. And I'll definitely pull through. We'll talk and then we'll see when we can have a young reunion.
I actually saw you this week. It was in the morning, you were driving your way to town in a white truck.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah.
How did I not recognize you?
But I was working. And I was like, it would be weird. I was like, no, let me not be that guy.
But that's the Rangers we know and love.
Be that guy.
That's the Rangers we know and love. Dude, I might have been going through some dark shit. You might have just elevated my day.
Yeah, I saw you, man. I see you. I saw you.
Yeah, no, we definitely need to link up. It's strange that Zimbabwe is Harare is such a small city, but you never bump into the people that you knew even though they're around. I don't know what's wrong with this place. But mnongo pesa.
Yeah, so true. So true.
Well, it sounds like Tutu is back. Hopefully everything's okay.
Yeah, no, everything's all good, right?
All right, so I was taking your host duties, and I was about to wrap up.
What were you saying?
I was saying I was taking over your host duties, and I was about to wrap up.
Oh, okay. For sure. Rangers, man, thank you for joining us, man. This was an awesome conversation. It was good to catch up revisit those days and talk about our shared love for marimbas and, remember experience. It was really fun just, being able to laugh and talk about some of the things that we've been, the MCC, the performances and all that. Those were some good times, man.
They were, definitely. I remember, I know for me personally, like, as parting reflections, I know, because, we were the Fruity Loops days, I remember, but I did this after I'd left when I was in university and I was missing marimbas. I saved the final audio of it. I don't know where I put it, but I will find it. And I literally was one day just bored in my dorm room at university and I opened Fruity Loops and I was like, let me see if I can try and make a marimba song on Fruity Loops. I think I did. I don't. I think I might have sent it to Mr. Manumanu just because I was like, hey, I created this. What do you think? So I'll find it and I'll send it to you guys. Yeah.
I dope, man.
Yeah, definitely do that. Now I've been there before. Mm-hmm. The creativity comes here. It's on automatic. You just have to sometimes. It's been like,
yeah, you need to get it up. You need to get it out.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. So yeah, thank you for joining us, people. It is another Chilly and Sizzy episode for your listening pleasure. I hope you can have a laugh with us, get some insight. If you're a Rimba person, I hope this takes you back to some memories of your own. This is the first of many. We're going to be revisiting this a lot as we detail Rimbas more and more. If you made it to the end, you're a superstar. If not, we'll see you again. Peace.
Peace.
Peace.